There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, just wanted to talk about a couple things. Rotoballer.com, still pumping out content, free content over there to get you ready for the fantasy baseball season. I know we don't know what's going to happen. Everything's up in the air. I hope everybody's staying safe and, you know, and spacing each other out and washing your hands and all that good stuff, because eventually we'll get through this and eventually we'll get baseball. It's going to happen. Hopefully in June at the earliest would be great. Maybe July, but one way or another, we are getting baseball, and we're going to keep getting ready for it over at rotoballer.com, and go check out all that great work over there. And also, thanks for listening to Bench with Bubba. If you guys give a rating and review, it helped the podcast out a ton. Going to keep pumping out content for you. If you guys have any ideas, any offshoot shows, you know, or the baseball movies, if you have other things, let me know. We'll keep pumping out content over here at Bench with Bubba, and thanks for listening, being great people that listen to the show. We got a good one for you today, episode 262. With Frank Stampfl of the Sports Grid recapping his Tout Wars draft, a couple thoughts on that auction, plus some players that were injured going into the season might not be now. So what's our thoughts on that? Enjoy the show. To another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 262. Gonna get back to talking some fantasy baseball today with a special guest, a recurring guest to the show. He's been with us before talking baseball, and love to have him back again. Find him on Twitter at @roto_frank, and he's from the Sports Grid. Lots of cool stuff over there. Frank Stampfl, how we doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, Bubba? I mean, given the circumstances, things are going quite well, about as well as they could be. Obviously, would be better if we had spring training baseball going on and opening day to look forward to. But, you know, just a reminder, everyone out there, stay safe, wash your hands. But yeah, it's an interesting time in life right now. And hopefully, you know, doing this show, this podcast, we can kind of give people an outlet, a source to kind of escape everything that's going on. But aside from that, I'm doing well. How about you, man?
Yeah, same thing. It's just the reason I keep doing these is to give people an outlet, you know, get their mind off things for a little while. It's nothing crazy. We kind of just speculate on stuff because none of us have an answer, but it's all about staying safe. And like I told people on the last show, it's just be selfless. Even if you can't get sick or whatever or that bad, think about everybody else. So that's what this is for. And we'll get through it together. It's you look at Korea, they're already scheduling a baseball season. So things are looking up if you just, you know, stick with the program. Things will be okay. It's just going to suck for a little while, but we will get there. But I wanted to have you on the show because you just took place in Tout Wars last week, and we'll recap that draft. But you were tweeting about it, and I've been asking people about it, so I want to get your thoughts on some players that, with this potential shortened season, first, just your thoughts. What kind of rough date are you prepping for if you're looking at a shortened season?
I think everyone's kind of different right now, but you know, June 1st is the date that I kind of see everyone throw around, you know, tentatively right now. So, you know, I'm kind of prepping for June. Wouldn't surprise me if this pushes into July, maybe even further. But, you know, just in terms of rankings, like where I'm moving players around, I'm kind of doing it with a mindset that some point in June, hopefully we can get things up and running again for the baseball season, and obviously for fantasy baseball. So that's kind of the mindset that I have right now is June, which, you know, like we're going to talk about, completely changes the valuation of, you know, all these injured players. And that's why I commend, you know, the NFBC, which is such a high stakes platform for fantasy baseball, for pushing back a ton of their drafts right now and their main events. Cause I had two entries in the main event. And I mean, at the time it would have been impossible to draft just in terms of trying to value players that are injured. So I do commend them for doing that. And I think for the most part, people should be pushing back their drafts. I understand, you know, if you can't, a lot of people kind of have it already planned, and, you know, getting that many people together on a similar date is, you know, is obviously hard to do, but I would recommend people pushing it back. And I'm currently planning for June, and let's cross our fingers, Bubba, that that's the case.
I'm with you. I think because like the earliest we've heard is, you know, May 15th or so, they can maybe get back into practicing, they'll have to stretch out. So now you're thinking early June. In reality, it's probably mid-June or something. So that's probably the reality of the situation. And that's what I'm trying to stay optimistic for. Even if it's empty stadiums, I'm cool with watching games in an empty stadium right now. I just want some baseball. So I'm 100% on board with that. And that's the interesting thing about it. I agree, these drafts, I'm trying to push back every draft I have. I'm glad the NFBC did it. We know Toutwars couldn't. We understand all that. Like, you know, there's certain circumstances where not everybody can. But it'd be really, really hard, especially like you said, you know, NFBC, the high-dollar deals, it's hard to do that and make a solid draft pick with that much money on the line. So I would recommend stepping back, just like you. Sit back and enjoy. If you have the itch, and I tweeted about it last night, I'll probably start some. If you don't want to spend a lot of money, let's just do some best ball 10s. Just have some fun. Just throw a couple bucks out there and see what happens. Get your brain going on it. But let's talk about some players, because these are going to be the injured guys for the most part. There's a lot of guys we could talk about, guys on innings limits that are going to change like that. But let's start with Justin Verlander. You know, he had a hip surgery, and he's supposed to be back within like 6 weeks, which if we're thinking June, middle of June, knock on wood, he's ready to go. He is 37 years old. But where are you looking to draft Verlander? Because ADP since March 1st in draft champions is around pick 14.
Yeah, so right now I'm kind of valuing Justin Verlander close to where I had him originally, which is, you know, in the top five starting pitchers. You mentioned that he had groin surgery and he's going to miss the next 6 weeks. But even then, you know, from the middle of March, that kind of puts him as a good to go date around late April, even early May. So if the season were to get started in June or July, whenever it might be, it seems like based on that timetable, Justin Verlander's going to be good to go. Now, obviously, there's risk for re-injury for any pitcher, and I guess even more so for a pitcher of his age. But, you know, if you dig into the numbers, which I'm sure that you've done already, Bubba, when it comes to Justin Verlander, like, yeah, you can find some negatives, you know, with like his fastball kind of declining. But, you know, outside of that, like, the whip is still amazing, the ERA is still great, like in terms of volume going deep into games, strikeouts as well. So I mean, I basically have him back where I had him before. I actually had a draft last night, a 15 team draft, that we couldn't push back because everyone had already agreed to this date, and he went in the middle of the second round. So you know, you get a little bit of a discount right now, but for the most part, I pretty much have him where I had him before, inside that top five.
Yeah, I'm with you. I first, before, when we thought we were having a season, I moved him back a pretty, you know, decent chunk outside of the top five. He's more like 10 or 11. So I still think, you know, 5 good months of Verlander is pretty darn good. But we might get 4 to 5 good months now, all things good. Probably 4 good months of Verlander. And you have to move him back up. He's probably behind, you know, Cole DeGrom. There's the Scherzers. There's the Buehlers. There's Verlander. That Scherzer-Verlander world where it gets a little murky for me, but that's kind of that the wheelhouse right there. So I'm 100% with you, because he's a workhorse, he's a strikeout machine, and he's one of those guys that so far has defied Father Time. And until he proves me wrong, I'm probably gonna sit there and keep drafting him where he's going. You mentioned the middle of round two and a 15 teamer, so pick, you know, 20 to 22, give or take. That's an absolute steal, where before the injury he was going into the first round. So you're getting a little bit of value there for him, no doubt about it. Let's talk Mike Clevinger. This is a guy that I was huge on coming into the year, and I know I wasn't the only one.
A lot of people like the Clev dog. He had the knee issue. Like last year, he had the arm issue. It shortened his season. Then the knee injury. He's rehabbing that. We've seen the long toss. We've seen him play wiffle ball with Trevor Bauer. All kinds of stuff like that with Clevenger. He's going around pick 33, and you know he was already ramping up to only miss maybe 2 to 4 weeks to start the season, which means he'll be ready to go if we pitch in June. So what's your thoughts on Clevenger?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of similar to Justin Verlander, and I guess, you know, I wouldn't even put as much injury risk on someone like Clevenger because he's a lot younger than Verlander, you know, just 29 years old. He has had some injury concerns in the past. He dealt with the back last year. You know, he's only pitched over 126 innings once in his career, but I think you're right. Like, when he's on the mound, he's one of the top 10, maybe 5 best pitchers in baseball right now. I mean, he had a 16-start stretch last year, Bubba, from July 3rd to September 24th, where he had a 1.76 ERA, 2.98 xFIP, 102 whip, almost 12 Ks per nine. We know he's got nasty breaking stuff, 15% swinging strike rate during that time period as well. So, yeah, I think similar to Verlander, you move him back to kind of where he was before, which for me was SP6. I had him just ahead of Shane Bieber. I had the Cleveland Indians back-to-back there with Clev and then Bieber at 7 as well. I know some people might have concerns over Bieber. I'm not one of those personally, but yeah, look, Clevenger, I just, in that draft last night, I actually took him in the second round. I started things off with Juan Soto, and then I took Clevenger in the second round. So, and I wound up with him on my Tout Wars team. So I guess that tells you how I feel about him. You know, by the time things get ramped up, it seems like he was going to be good to go by the middle of April, maybe missed the first couple of weeks, the first month of the season, if we would have started on time. And we had videos of him kind of pitching and ramping things up and, you know, throwing off a mound already. So I think a lot of people were already optimistic about him. And I think even more so now, I think you just kind of move him back to where he was before in that second round, similar to Justin Verlander. I have no problem with it. I've already invested twice.
I like how you took him as your SP1, because that's how I viewed him prior to the injury. And if we were starting in April, I would have probably dropped him down to an SP2 for me, but still like a top, you know, 4-round, 5-round at the latest option. I still liked him quite a bit. Now, you know, you're going to get a full run. And you mentioned he's only pitched 126 innings. The most innings is 126. And one thing is, we're, again, all speculation aside, say we start mid-June, you know, a guy that you'd hope for 200 innings, now 130 to 140 innings is a good season. So now Clevenger's rolling right with the rest of them. It might even not even be that many innings. So, yeah, I'm with you. I like the Clev dog. I'm assuming he's going to be healthy. And until I hear otherwise, I'm going to move him right back up the rankings. He's a top-end pitcher for me as well. The next two we're going to talk about, I have a little bit more mixed emotions on. First, we're going to start with Blake Snell. You know, the cortisone shot, they were saying he was going to be fine. It was in his shoulder, that he was going to be ready for opening day. I found that hard to believe still. I think he benefits tremendously from this extra time. He's going around pick 42. He's a guy I'm really nervous about still. Are you concerned at all with Snell?
Yeah, absolutely. I still have him down at SP20, which, I mean, that might be ranking him aggressively too low, but it seems like there's no middle ground. You either feel really strongly about, you know, kind of leaving Blake Snell where he was, or you're kind of going the complete opposite way. And I currently lean with the latter, obviously, based on where I have him ranked. And there's a lot of people who aren't really worried because, as we'll talk about in Tout Wars, I mean, he still went for a pretty decent price tag. And last night in the draft I was doing, he still went in the second round. So it's a little aggressive for me. And look, like we're going to talk about with Chris Sale as well, I mean, these are guys that are dealing with kind of recurring injuries. Blake Snell last year, before he kind of had the whole furniture fiasco where he like dropped something on his toe and fractured his toe, he was great. There's no doubt about it. Like his first, I think it was like 7-8 starts of the season. I mean, he was ridiculous. The strikeouts, the swinging strike rate, everything was there on a super elite level for Blake Snell. But I mean, once he returned from that injury, it seems like he might have even returned too soon. Wound up having the cortisone shot in the elbow this year in spring training. Last year he got, you know, shut down with an elbow injury as well. So especially to his pitching arm too. So I'm a little bit more worried about Blake Snell. I'm sure the time off is going to do him well, but this is still something that I could see recurring at some point this season, even further down the long. Down the line, just future long-term in terms of Blake Snell, even in a keeper, a dynasty league. I mean, this is one that I do worry about long-term. The last time we saw him, he made his return in spring training and he only got one out. he had like four walks. I believe the velocity was still up, which is obviously what you want to see, but just had no feel for his pitches whatsoever. So yeah, I'm with you on this one. I do worry about Blake Snell, and I'm aggressively ranking him pretty low as of now.
Yeah, he's pretty much off the list for me as well. And I think it's what, when you're ranking him as aggressively low as you are, it's basically saying I'm not drafting him. And that's what I do. Right. For certain guys, there's other guys I aggressively, you know, rank higher because I'm that high on them. I want to get them type situation. Blake Snell is a guy, like you said, reoccurring injury. A shoulder is very concerning. You know, shoulder, elbow, forearm, those are the things we worry about. Shoulder is pretty bad. Do you need a cortisone shot? The velocity up was good, but no command. We'll see. I think I'm just going to pass on him. And then it goes to Chris Sale, who you were talking about. He's going around pick 94 right now, and I still think he's having Tommy John surgery. I hope he doesn't. But at the same time, it's going to really suck when he does, because they could have started this surgery a long time ago and be rehabbing already. Now they're going to play this game. I'm super off on Chris Sale. What's your thoughts on Sale?
Yeah, I agree entirely too. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Luis Severino situation as well, where, you know, the Yankees basically knew that he was dealing with something, you know, going back to last year. So they could have kind of started that process for Severino. And I'm a Yankee fan too. So the way that they've handled all these injuries, from Severino to Paxton to Judge, I mean, these are injuries they've been dealing with going back to last year. So it kind of reminds me a little bit of that with Chris Sale. And I agree with you. You know, I mean, they already have him under contract. If they had the ability to kind of, it seemed like they were not punting the season, but kind of, let's kind of call it for what it is. I mean, they traded away Mookie Betts, and you look at the rest of that rotation. I mean, it's not a pretty sight. They have Eduardo Rodriguez and Nathan Eovaldi there at the top, but, you know, outside of those two guys, they really don't have much in that rotation. So it seems like they were kind of, you know, a reset year here for the Boston Red Sox. I think it would have made sense for, you know, if ultimately he's going to need Tommy John surgery, that's something they probably should have either looked into or should have had him, you know, have that surgery already. But again, similar to Blake Snell, I mean, this is recurring. This is going back to last year. And I had Chris Sale in my main event last season. And so I watched all of his starts very closely. Something was very off about him. I mean, you can cite the swinging strike rate, the xFIP, the underlying numbers. I'm just telling you what I watched every single time out, and Chris Sale was not himself. The velocity was down. He was missing his spots. He was allowing a much more hard contact than ever before. He was giving up a ton of home runs. Granted, juice ball year, everyone was giving up home runs, but something was not right with Chris Sale last year. Shoulder, elbow, I mean, a ton of concerns, and we've kind of had these concerns for a while for Chris Sale, because he has like that wiry frame and that kind of weird delivery. And we were kind of worried, like, when is it going to, not a matter of if, but when it's going to happen with Chris Sale. And I think it's something that you can kind of relate to a little bit more too, considering, you know, you're a Giants fan and you kind of saw this happen with Tim Lincecum. Mm-hmm. Wiry frame. We were almost kind of expecting it for a while. Not the same, obviously, between Chris Sale and Tim Lincecum, but I think there are kind of similar aspects there between the two guys. So I'm with you. I have him down at like SP 47. Like, sure, if you can get him with your last pick in your draft, why not? There's no risk there. But if you have to invest a top 150 pick, which I think people are still doing, that just seems absolutely crazy to me.
Yeah, they're still investing. He's in the top 100 over the last month. It's crazy that people are actually doing that. It makes you wonder. I think it's too late to say they were wrong, but you'd have, you know, you could never predict what's happening right now. But if they were to know that they maybe play like two-thirds of a season or a half a season, they might have already had that surgery. Like, I think if they were to know they're already kind of throwing in the towel this year, they just had the surgery. But it's almost too late to be like, oh yeah, never mind, he needs a surgery now. It's a weird spot the Red Sox are in for sure. We just talked about two guys we're kind of out on with these. James Paxton, you know, is always injury prone for something or another. The back issue scared the snot out of me coming into this season. But the fact he was already throwing, now they seem a little sooner than he should have been throwing. Now they can slow it down again, get him ramped up properly. There's a good chance he's ready right out the gate here. And he's going around pick 160. I think Paxton's a guy that's interesting about buying back in on. What's your take on Paxton?
Yeah, so I kind of alluded to it already, the fact that, you know, I think the way that the Yankees have handled their injuries the past couple of seasons has been god-awful. But from a fantasy baseball perspective, I'm with you. I think that there's a buying opportunity here. I actually wound up with James Paxton on my Tout Wars team. And again, we'll get into that a little bit later on. But, you know, this is someone that we were expecting back in early May, maybe mid-May. And again, if the season is starting in June or July, it seems like he should be good to go by the time things ramp back up. You know, it's a little bit similar to Snell and Sale, where you do have some concern because he's just dealt with so many injuries, right? Like, just because he's going to be ready to start the season on time, it doesn't mean that, you know, things are just going to be smooth sailing for the rest of the season, you know, if and when we get started up here with Major League Baseball. But, you know, he's just dealt with so many injuries the past couple seasons, back injuries, a bunch of different things. I believe he's had, like, knee injuries as well. There's no doubting when he's on the mound, like, in terms of strikeout rate, I mean, he's one of the best premier sources of strikeouts in baseball from a fantasy perspective as well. But, you know, I do see a buying opportunity here as well. It seems like once we get started up, he's probably back in that, you know, top 30-ish starting pitcher discussion. I think that that's fair to say when it comes to James Paxton. But, yeah, I'm with you. I see a buying opportunity here, but I will kind of caution people, like, don't be too optimistic because he's just dealt with so many things over the past couple seasons.
Yeah, he seems to be able to find the banana peel wherever it's at. He's really good at that. But when he's on the mound, he's outstanding. One of the better pitchers in baseball. I was kind of optimistic this year after what we saw to end last season with the Yankees. I think I had him in between SP20, SP25, give or take. When he got hurt, I pretty much put him off my list because I hate back injuries. But on this kind of season where the requirements aren't as large going forward, definitely more intriguing to me and kind of moves back up to where I had him going into the season. So right now he comes at a bit of a value at this point in time. Now let's talk about a couple bats here. Willie Calhoun was a guy I was big time hyped on this season. Takes one in the jaw from Julio Urias, had surgery. They didn't have to wire his jaw shut, which is very surprising and I think good. Reports came out a couple days ago. He's cleared to start some light baseball activities, which again, good. If he keeps in this trend, you'd imagine he could be back sometime in June, even maybe May, if things work out properly. And it might just mean, you know, Willie Calhoun's back. Now, what mental side of it, of taking one of the fastball to the face, how does that feel stepping back in the box? None of us will know. It's different for everybody. But right now, he's going around pick 181. Are you good with going back to Willie Calhoun, kind of how we saw him before the injury, or are you still concerned?
Yeah, I'm going back to Willie Calhoun and Bubba. I mean, this is a Frank Stanfill special right here. I mean, I have not been able to quit Willie Calhoun. I mean, I've been drafting him basically every season since like 2017. Like, I can't give up on the guy. And just going back to that 2017 season that he had in the minors, I mean, 31 homers with a .300 batting average. He was the prized possession in that trade that sent Yu Darvish from the Rangers to the Los Angeles Dodgers at the time. And I can't quit him. I think this is someone who has the upside to hit, you know, 35 plus homers, 280 plus batting average. You know, I was talking with Scott White of CBS on Twitter about this. He's kind of likened him to Mike Moustakas. I think that that's a very fair comp. I mean, if we can get Mike Moustakas, his type of numbers in the outfield based on where Willie Calhoun is going as well, I think that, you know, that's, I mean, that would be great value for where he's going right now. And now I'm going to keep referencing the few drafts that I've done recently, but I did wind up with him last night again. I believe it took him in like round 12 as my third outfielder off the board. So that's not really dissimilar from where he was going before all this happened. I agree that there might be a mental aspect, again, that he has to get over. He's going to have to wear that new helmet, similar to how Stanton used it a couple of years ago, the kind of face guard helmet. He's going to have to get used to that as well. But Bubba, this was finally the year that he was going to step in, everyday starting job in the outfield. Didn't really have anything to worry about. It seemed like they were kind of finally handing him the keys to the car there, and he was just going to take off. I still think he's someone that can hit, you know, 30 to 40 home runs with a .280+ batting average. And for where you're getting him, I still think it's a great value. So, yeah, I'm buying back in on him.
100% agree with you there. I think that Moustakas comparison is really solid. I like that a lot. Quickly on Calhoun. You know, some people were saying it with when he got hurt, it opened the door for Nick Solak consistent playing time because Solak is like utility guy with Santana in center field. With Calhoun back, it limits Solak back to utility. Just quickly, do you have any quick thoughts on a guy like Nick Solak? Were you ever in or out on him?
Yeah, I like Solak. I like what I saw from him last year in both the minors and the majors. I mean, a lot of what he did in the minors last year actually translated to the major league level. He has good eye at the plate as well, good bat-to-ball skills, could hit for average, has a little bit of pop. But it's going to be interesting to see how they handle this now. It was really frustrating for me, at least, when they signed Todd Frazier in the offseason, because that kind of, you know, dampened the upside of someone like Nick Solak. Now, I will say this, before kind of everything went down with Willie Calhoun, they were talking about how they were not getting any production from Ronald Guzman or Greg Bird in spring training. So I still think that there's a chance that they can move Todd Frazier over to first base. They can have Nick Solak play third base as well, and they can kind of get creative with things to get his bat in the lineup, because ultimately I think that that's what they want to do. I think they want to find a way to get Nick Solak in there, and he's someone that I am definitely interested in. So kind of just keep that in the back of your mind. I think a lot of people are just going to think, like, oh, well, Willie Calhoun's back. That means no spot for Nick Solak. I don't know that the Rangers necessarily owe anything to someone like Ronald Guzman or Greg Bird if they're not producing at the plate. So I think that they can get creative, move Todd Frazier over to first and Solak over to third if that's something that they really wanted to do.
I love it. Yeah, I liked Solak a lot. Picked him up at TGFBI last year. He's got some power, speed, that sneaky good stuff. He has some nice position eligibility as well to start the year, depending on where he goes. So I'm with you there, and he's going super cheap in drafts. Let's talk Jordan Alvarez, going to pick 45. He's got the knee injuries. I've been kind of concerned because he's way too young for me to have knee injuries that have lasted this long. Everyone said it was like a day or two rest. He'll be back, and he never came back, Frank. He never came back. And then the spring training was canceled. So we never saw Jordan Alvarez do anything, and it just concerns me with a guy that can DH only, bad knees, he's young. He was going in the first two rounds of 15-team leagues early on. Now, like I said, he's dropped all the way down to 45 or 46, so he's on the 3-4 turn, which it means some people are starting to believe that as well. Are you in on Jordan, or do these injuries worry you a bit? Because if it's util only, get Nelson Cruz later.
Yeah, that's been my exact mindset all along going into draft season, is that, you know, why would I take Jordan Alvarez in the second or third round when you can get Nelson Cruz in the fifth or sixth? And I understand they're complete opposites in terms of like where they're at in their career. And Jordan Alvarez's upside is no doubt higher than Nelson Cruz's. Like, there's a chance that this guy can legitimately hit 300 with 50 home runs. I mean, last year between the minors and the majors, Alvarez did hit 50 home runs. So, I mean, that can be his upside in the majors. But in order for him to reach that upside, he has to be on the field. And, you know, I have concern over these knee issues as well. I mean, Bubba, I'm 28 years old. I got some knee pain. I used to play basketball and stuff, but I am also not a premier athlete. I am not a professional athlete as well. So I'm allowed to have knee pain because all I do is, you know, sit in my basement apartment and talk fantasy baseball with guys like you, Bubba. So it's all right for me to have knee issues. It's not all right for a 22-year-old Jordan Alvarez to have knee issues. So I do worry about it. But I will say, to quote Ted DiBiase, everybody has a price.
That is so true.
Last night, he went in the fifth round. He almost fell to me at 5'11 at the end of the fifth round. And if he was there, I would have jumped on him at that point, because if he continues to fall that far, that's something that I can get in on, because now we're closing the gap between him and Nelson Cruz. So where he was going before, second, third round, I can't get behind that. If he starts falling into the fourth, fifth round, based on what I think his upside can be, even with the downside of his injury risk, I would be willing to take that risk. But if he does kind of go back to where he was before in the third round, I'll just take Nelson Cruz at the end of the fifth or beginning of the sixth. Because that was the case for most of the draft season, Bubba.
That's a phenomenal point, and that's something I've said on many shows, is everyone's got a price, and Ted DiBiase says it a lot better than I do. But it makes sense. If he keeps falling, that's what I noticed now going to pick 46. You were doing drafts right early on that we saw him going in the second round. So if he continues to fall, he's gone as low as pick 56 over the last month, then yes, I am on board with that, because – in the end, as much as I am concerned with a 22-year-old having knee problems, he's a designated hitter. So if he can just kind of plug along, we're not looking for him for stolen bases. There's something to at least be intrigued by. So I'm with you there 100%. Last two guys we're going to talk to here are the Yankee sluggers. Aaron Judge going to pick 58. Giancarlo at pick 91. Giancarlo news came out that he's already taken batting practice, and he's looking like he'll be ready to roll here for sure, barring another Giancarlo type injury by June. Shouldn't be an issue. Judge, on the other hand, he had the surgery. We don't know when he's going to be back to baseball activities. I'm a little more concerned with Judge. What's your take on your two Yankees?
I want nothing to do with either one. And that comes to you as a Yankee fan. If I can give anybody a piece of advice here for the draft season, is stay away from Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge. And the reason being is I don't think that what they offer, at least from, you know, a 5x5 batting average perspective, I don't think that what they offer is worth where they're going right now. I will say that when the injuries originally took place and, you know, we saw Stanton going outside the top 100 picks and drafts, then, all right, that kind of piques my interest a little bit. But based on the news that we received and the fact that the season is going to be delayed, I think that we're going to see Stanton kind of move back up into that fourth, fifth round range. Aaron Judge likely going to move back up into that third, fourth round range as well. And for me, that's just a really, really high price to ask either one of these players to achieve. I mean, they've been consistently injured. I know a lot of people are going to point out, well, oh, before last year, Giancarlo Stanton was healthy. I mean, Matt Modica has pointed this out on Twitter as well. Giancarlo Stanton has one season of more than 40 home runs in his career. And obviously it was that massive season where he won the MVP with the Miami Marlins. But in terms of consistency, I mean, if you want a guy that's going to hit 35 to 40 home runs, why don't you just wait 5 or 6 rounds and take Franmil Reyes? Or why don't you just take Kyle Schwarber if that's the case, right? I just think that you can get similar skill sets to what Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton offer where they're going, right? So if Judge moves back up into that third, fourth round range, I mean, if you take him there, you are passing up on guys that are legitimate batting average contributors, legitimate stolen base contributors, and those are the scarcest categories this year. And Aaron Judge contributes nothing in either one of those. Yes, he'll give you home runs, he'll give you runs, and he'll give you RBIs. But it wouldn't surprise me if these guys are injured at some point throughout the course of the season again. The Yankees, I'm telling you, as a fan watching the game, paying attention to the team very closely, they understand that they have a wealth of riches. So they're going to give these guys days off. You're not going to see, you know, these guys playing every single day. They have Clint Frazier. They have Mike Tauchman. Aaron Hicks is going to be back. Brett Gardner's on that team. They have a ton of depth. So I don't think that they're going to play every day. And I think that there's a legitimate chance for re-injury as well for both of these guys. Bubba, I've said this as well. These guys are too jacked for their own good. They have to go on like the Babe Ruth diet. I mean, just beer and hot dogs, because they're almost like they have too much muscle mass. I mean, guys like that are not meant to, I believe, you know, play baseball every single day without suffering an injury. So because of that, I'm going to be fading both of these guys once again, unless we see the price tag kind of drop back down. And I don't see that happening.
Yeah, Judge, I've been off on all year. I even wrote an article at Roto Baller, an ADP analysis, and I basically wrote the argument to take Franmil Reyes over Aaron Judge. That was my argument the whole time. You can get the same player even better a lot later in drafts. I'm with you there. Stanton's price tag, as it's dropped, intrigues me more. I'm still not in love with it because there's a lot of other players at the time of the draft, like you're saying. You can even wait on a Franmil, like you're saying as well. He gets me intrigued, but I'm with you. The injuries are just too real with these guys, and it's really scary. And in reality, outside of the Rays, who I think are going to the playoffs out of the AL East, the Yankees should at worst win the division, if not win a wild card spot. They can kind of play the playing time game with these guys. They got Gardner. That Hicks will be coming back from an injury. That they have options in the outfield and a designated hitter. You know, Gary Sanchez is already banged up with the back, but we've seen him only play like, what, 120 games max in a season. He hasn't played much, and he still drops bombs everywhere. So it's what the Yankees do. They just find ways to do it, and you know that better than anybody. So no questioning that at all. Let's get into your tout wars here. You did the head-to-head points league auction over the weekend. With everything we've kind of hinted on with the different atmosphere in the world that we're waiting in for baseball, what did you do to prepare for this? Like, how did you look at things going into it?
Yeah, so I basically had a plan, like a rubric, and I do this for all of my auctions beforehand, where I kind of have an idea of what I want to do at each position. I have kind of money allocated in the salary to each position. I kind of know beforehand how much I'm going to spend at each position. And if I don't get the main player that I want, I almost have a backup option as well. So I have all of that kind of pre-planned beforehand, and I did that weeks before this auction took place. So, and that was also weeks before we knew everything that was going on with the coronavirus, obviously, and the delay of the season and how it kind of changed things. Ultimately, it didn't really change things for me all that much. I knew that, you know, I wanted to spend around $30 to $35 on an A starting pitcher, and I wound up doing that. I knew that I didn't want to spend really more than, you know, $30 to $35 on any player. I kind of like to live in the middle tier when it comes to at least the head-to-head points auction, because I actually have a home league that's very similar rules to what the Tout Wars head-to-head points auction is. So I'm kind of used to this this format. I've played in something like this before, and I really like to attack it where I don't pay up for the big names and I kind of just live in the mid-tier. But ultimately, the news didn't really change anything. It kind of, if it changed, the one thing it did change is kind of like which players were available to me, because, you know, 2 weeks before the auction, when I kind of set up this outline for what I wanted to do, I didn't have guys like Verlander and Clevinger on there. But, you know, going in, once we kind of had the information that we had, then yeah, like if those guys are going for $30 to $35 and that's what I want to spend for my SP1, then they're definitely in play. And ultimately, that's how things ended up working out.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. One thing you mentioned is the format. That I know Tout Wars usually does OBP and other things, but head-to-head, I know they've been changing the point structure the last couple years, and I heard they made tweaks this year. What is the format? Like, what differences compared to the standards that most people are used to?
Yeah, so normally I play with, like, the CBS Sports kind of their default scoring format. I think the only thing that might be different is home runs in this format in Tout Wars are worth 5 points. So it's a point for a single, 2 points for a double, 3 points for a triple, 5 points for a home run, 2 points for a stolen base, which I think all that is pretty standard outside of the home run. They added a point there, 1 run for RBI, one run for a run scored, 1 point for a walk as well. You lose a half a point for a strikeout. And then on the pitching side of things, wins are worth 8 points. Saves are worth 5. Blown saves are also worth minus 5 points as well. There's a bonus for quality starts. I believe it's like a 5 point bonus, and you get a point per out, so 3 points per innings pitch. So, I mean, if you played in a head-to-head points format, it's pretty standard for the most part. But I think what stands out to me the most is the fact that a save is worth 5, a win is worth 8, and a blown save is worth minus 5, whereas a loss is only worth minus 3, which basically renders relief pitchers and closers useless in this format.
That's what I was about to say, is it really changes things. Like, did you play in the Raz Slam at all?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually just finished it today.
Mine finished last night. So, yeah, it was crazy. Thought we'd never end.
Yeah.
But that format, I've never done the cut line before. And it really kind of gives you the idea that, you know, relievers, not just closers, are a little more important, if that makes sense, because you can just take the good weeks where the strikeouts are worth so much, the saves. Now, you did get blown save issues there, but also it seemed like losses were a little more of a hindrance with your starters, per se. So it was kind of – I relief pitched heavy towards the end there, but maybe I'm totally off. But let's look at your squad here. You mentioned you got, you know, your Clevinger at $32. You got J-Ram at $32. I am huge on J-Ram. I take it you're a believer in a bounce-back season?
Yeah, I really like what he did, obviously, in the second half. Basically, from July 1st, he kind of went back to the player that he was. And the issues that we saw in the first half of the season, Bubba, are the same that we saw in the second half of the 2018 season, where he was basically trying to lift the ball just too much. He was trying to hit home runs, and ultimately that hindered his production. But last year in the second half, he got back to the player he was in the first half of 2018, back to the player he was in 2017, where he just focuses on hitting line drives and pulling the ball more. And when he does that, the home runs are going to come. He doesn't have to worry about stressing home runs. If he just kind of, you know, plays his game, the home runs are going to be there. And I think he's someone that can get close to being a 30-30 player again this season. I mean, amidst everything that was happening last year, the stolen bases were the one thing that remained. And in a head-to-head points league, plate discipline is very crucial. And he's someone who doesn't strike out all that much. He obviously has a good eye at the plate. He gets on base via the walk. I think it was 2 years ago, in 2018, he actually was the highest scoring hitter in head-to-head points league. So I think at $32, he does have upside in this format.
Yep. People have given me a hard time, and I understand that there's good debates in rankings that are out there, but that's the beauty of my rankings. They can be who I like, and they can differ from others, but I have had Jose Ramirez as my top third baseman off the board this year, even ahead of Arenado, and I get it if people disagree. I just think with the value of steals this year, I think Jose is going to have a monster season. So I'm with you on the price you paid for him. I don't see where Arenado went here. It's just a smorgasbord of numbers here. Let me see here. Arenado, he went for 39, so he got like $7 difference between the two. Not too shabby. You know, some people talk about auctions. They have like a 70-30, 65-35 split for offense and pitching. Did you go into it with a certain split?
Yeah, so I did go into it with a – I wanted to spend $170, around $170 on my hitting and $90 on my pitching, which is close to a 65-35 split. But in hindsight, I do somewhat regret it because, you know, players that I respect in Ian Khan, who won this league the year before, and Clay Link, who has been competitive basically in every league ever, two guys that I really respect, they wound up spending close to 50% on each, 50% hitting and 50% pitching. So that's something that I might wind up regretting and something that I think I should keep in my mind heading into next year's auction as well. But I did kind of have that 65-35 split heading into this. And for people wondering why, the main reason is because you start 13 or 14 hitters and you only start 9 pitchers. So you're starting more of that position. And I figured, you know, you should have more of your budget go towards that way in favor of hitting. So that's kind of how I had it outlined beforehand.
No doubt about it. Good point on that. I see you got Salvi Perez at 7. I'm a huge Salvi bounce back guy. I think that's a really good price there. You got Starling Marte for $16. I don't know what you had him budgeted at, but just off the top of my head, we saw like in TGFBI, Todd Zola take him as high as pick 13. I think I took him at 24. His average ADP was around 24. Getting him for $16 seems like quite the value there. Were you looking to get Marte, or did this just be one where you were bidding on it and he just kind of fell to you?
So I didn't have any, you know, I wasn't trying to get Starling Marte going into this auction at all. But and I will say this, he's someone who is much better in Roto than he is in a head-to-head points league because, again, plate discipline, he doesn't walk all that much. He's, you know, better in Roto because he obviously hits for the high batting average and steals bases. And stolen bases are not, you know, paramount in head-to-head points leagues. But he's still going to bat in the top three of a solid lineup with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And, you know, I think another thing is avoiding players that are often injury-prone is probably something that you should look at when it comes to head-to-head points leagues. But even that, I mean, for $16, Starling Marte went for the same price as Giancarlo Stanton in this auction. And I've already kind of made my thoughts known about Giancarlo Stanton. So for $16, I kind of had it budgeted where I wanted to spend $12 to $15 on my second outfielder. And I didn't have Starling Marte written in there. But when I kind of saw the bidding slowing down around 15, I was like, all right, let me jump in here. I wound up getting him for $16. Better Roto player for sure. But at this price tag, I don't have any problem taking him for that cost in a head-to-head points league.
Totally agree. That's why I thought that was an interesting buy there. You mentioned in this points league where you get a little more benefit to, say, guys that walk. Carlos Santana is going to get you a lot of points. That's a big one. You got some George Springer, Xander. Lucas Giolito looks like to be your number two based on how much money you spent. You got Lucas, and you got Frankie Montas to kind of be your top three. Or no, Mike Soroka as well. What's your thoughts on Lucas Giolito? Because some people have him as a potential ace. Some have him as an SP2. He's your SP2, but what's your take on him?
Yeah, so I have Giolito ranked inside my top 12, and I trust what I saw from Lucas Giolito last year. We know he has the prospect pedigree, and you know he changed things last year. I mean, he made tangible changes where completely changed his mechanics. The velocity went up last year, you know, 94 miles per hour on the fastball. And, you know, he started giving you depth, too, in the second half of the season, started going deeper into games. In the second half, he went at least six innings pitched in 11 of 12 starts in that second half. The 3.76 ERA, a little bit misleading. He had a 3.28 xFIP in the second half, nearly 13 Ks per nine during that time, 15.6% swinging strike rate. It seems like a lot of people are kind of torn on what to do with Lucas Giolito right now. But if you buy into any of what he did last year, I think that you have to be on the optimistic side of Giolito. And, you know, I say all that, and I haven't even mentioned the fact that Yasmani Grandal is now the catcher of the White Sox, and he's one of the best pitch framers in the game, and he's going to help guys like Giolito, like Dylan Cease, like Michael Kopech tremendously in stealing strikes. And I think that that's just another positive for him. So to get him for $20 here, where, you know, other players, I guess, in this tier, like Chris Paddock went for $23, Charlie Morton $25, Zach Greinke went for $29. Give me the savings on Lucas Giolito. I was actually really surprised that the bidding just kind of stopped there at $20.
Yeah, that seemed like a really cheap price there. That's a heck of a steal at that point in time. Let's talk about some of the values. Like, you got Frankie Montas at $6. That's fun. That's good. I love the David Price at $5. I think, especially on a shortened season, you don't have to worry about innings. That's huge. Matt Bum at $6. James Paxton at $5. We just talked about him. But I want to talk Chris Davis with you. You have Chris Davis for $3. And I'm not talking about a C. I'm talking about a K, Chris Davis. What's your hopes of Chris Davis in this season?
Yeah, I think you can attribute a lot of what went wrong with Chris Davis last year to the injury, obviously, right? So, you know, he was trying to make a catch and he wound up like running into the wall in Seattle. I mean, I don't know what the name of – it's not Safeco anymore. I know they changed the name there of the Seattle ballpark. But before the injury last year, I mean, he had 10 home runs, 26 RBIs. He was basically on pace for another 40 home run season. So I really do kind of attribute – everything that happened from that point on, which was May 5th, anything after that was really kind of attributed to what happened with the injury. And so I'm kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt. And I think he can kind of bounce back, maybe not 40 home runs like we've seen before, but if he can hit 35 with a 240 batting average, again, you get 5 fantasy points per home run for $3. This is one thing that I could do later on in this auction, Bubba, was I kind of had a lot of money left late where I was able to kind of get guys like Mad Bum for cheap, David Price for cheap, Chris Davis for $3, because everyone at that point really didn't have money. So I kind of was able to kind of drop the hammer for some of these mid-round players. And I think it wound up working out for the most part. I mean, Chris Davis, $3. Yep. Sign me up every day of the week.
All day. Like I said, I love the Mad Bum. I love the David Price picks. I like this Fantrax tells you what time you drafted them at, so you could tell – you got these guys towards the end of the draft here because your early picks are around 3:20 and these are in the 6 o'clock hour. So guys are whittling things down, which I like quite a bit here. A couple other values. You got like Wilson Ramos at $2 as your catcher too, which I think is pretty nice. But let's talk Byron Buxton, the elephant in every draft room. You got him for $1. And I know it's Byron Buxton and he's a tilting his all get up, but even in like 130 games, he's crazy talented enough to go 20-20. What's your take? Like $1 seems like, how did no one else bid $2 to me?
Yeah, so he was just one of the last players thrown out, and we were kind of at that point in the auction where most people only had a max bid of $1 left. And admittedly, I actually got, you know, a few other players stolen from me before Byron Buxton. I think I tried for Brian Reynolds for $1. Someone had money left. They wound up getting for $2. Willie Calhoun, spoke about him earlier, someone I love. I tried to get him for $1. Someone else had the ability to go to $2. I just didn't have that ability late in the auction. And that's something I think that, you know, I'll learn from here. And I think a lot of people can also learn from, is that while we were getting towards the end of this auction, I almost felt like I had too much money left. So you could see that I wound up bidding on like the Bumgarners, the Paxtons, and the Chris Davises. And then I had like 4 spots left where I can only spend $1 left on each one of those. So you might want to save a little bit more money for the end if you just want to be able to kind of get those late round players that you want. But look, when it comes to Buxton, he's not a great points league player either. I'll admit that. Better for Roto for sure because of the stolen bases. But last year, I mean, before he got hurt, you know, he was performing well. And, you know, he was cutting down the strikeouts and had improved plate discipline. And we're still kind of enamored with the prospect pedigree. It seems like, you know, he's just been around forever and we're just waiting for him to finally do it. But look, for $1, I don't really think there's much risk. And I kind of covered myself in the reserve rounds. I took some, I guess you could call them boring outfielders, but Austin Hayes, Gregory Polanco, Brandon Nimmo. I kind of covered myself because I took Kyle Tucker and Byron Buxton as my outfielder 4 and 5. But with some of those reserve round outfielders, they're just kind of like safe floor plays that I guess are kind of good to counteract the downside of someone like Buxton or Kyle Tucker.
I love that Austin Hayes pick. He's been a target of mine in late drafts. I really like some Austin Hayes upside with the Orioles there. A couple other dollar players here. Nate Eovaldi is a guy I've been targeting quite a bit. Velo up, big strikeout stuff. I'm intrigued by him. But as a Yankees fan, I know it's only $1, so you have nothing to lose here. I'm just curious on your thoughts on Masahiro Tanaka, because you know, seeing him for a dollar, I know you mentioned the points you lose for the losses and other little factors there, but still the Yankees are going to be hitting behind him. He's still, the arm's still put together. What's your thoughts on Tanaka, a guy we used to draft a lot higher or pay a lot more money for?
Yeah, so we heard this from a lot of different pitchers last year that when the ball changed, that it kind of ruined their grip on certain pitches. And we heard that from Syndergaard with his slider. Same thing with Edwin Diaz. And you saw those two guys kind of have like down seasons by their standards. And the same thing could be said for Masahiro Tanaka. He basically said that he just didn't have a grip on that splitter whatsoever. And watching his performances in spring training before everything kind of got shut down here, it looked like the splitter was back on. And that's everything that, you know, the Yankees beat writers were saying. That's everything that Tanaka was saying, was that it feels like he can get a grip on that splitter once again. And just kind of think about it from any pitcher's perspective, right? If you take away any pitcher's best pitch, like, it's going to hurt them tremendously. There's just no doubt about it. So if that was actually the case last year where he couldn't get a grip on that splitter, then I think you kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. I will say this. Look, it kind of seems like we've been waiting for Masahiro Tanaka to be that player he was when he first kind of joined the Yankees for years now, and it hasn't happened. I don't know that it's going to happen, but again, for a dollar, I'm willing to take that risk. And in this format where, you know, wins are worth 8 fantasy points, you almost kind of just want to chase pitchers who are on good teams, and that's kind of what I was looking at with guys like Masahiro Tanaka and James Paxton as well with the Yankees. They should be in line for a ton of wins this upcoming season. But I do think if he has that grip back on the splitter, we can get him back to, you know, a strikeout per inning type pitcher, probably around a 4 ERA with a very solid whip. I mean, that's one category he'll always contribute is in the whip category.
No, I love it. That's one thing I'm really, really intrigued by with him, is the wins will be there, the whip will be there. It's just a matter of what else comes with him, because like I said, a dollar surprised me. But then again, it is a points format. It's a 12-man league where you're auctions, things can get weird. So it intrigued me quite a bit. What was your overall thoughts on your team? I know everyone usually likes their team leaving the draft. Is there any holes you're worried about? Is there any things you're already looking to address leaving the draft? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so overall, I like the team that I wound up with here. And I kind of attacked you know, what I wanted to do to a T. I mean, I can send you a picture after this, Bubba, of kind of the outline that I had heading into this. And I wound up with a lot of players that I wanted to. And I will just kind of point out, for anyone who plays in a head-to-head points league, I kind of liken it to DFS. And I know you play a lot of DFS baseball as well, Bubba. When you play in a head-to-head points leagues, you want to target hitters that are on really good lineups and bat in the top half of those lineups. For similar reasons to DFS, is that you just want to give yourself more opportunities for fantasy points, right? Obviously, more at-bats, more plate appearances will lead to more opportunities at fantasy points. So that's exactly what I wanted to do, attacking guys like DJ LeMay, who's going to lead off for the Yankees, should see a ton of at-bats. George Springer, just a couple of years ago, led the league in plate appearances, and last year actually ranked 4th among outfielders in fantasy points per game. So if he can just manage to stay healthy this upcoming season in a contract year for George Springer, I think he's someone you want to target in a points league. Same thing with Xander Bogaerts, just hits a ton of doubles, has good plate discipline as well. I think that that's a way that you should kind of attack head-to-head points leagues. The one regret, again, that I do have is I think that I probably should have had a more even split here in terms of the pitching and hitting, how I kind of distributed the money in the auction. And I kind of wish that I had another solid, like, top 20 starting pitcher. And there's a chance that guys like Mike Soroka and Frankie Montas can take that next step. But if they don't, then, you know, I kind of have some work to do there. And, you know, I did want someone like a Charlie Morton, or, you know, potentially like a Chris Paddock or Noah Syndergaard as an SP3, just someone personally I felt a little bit more comfortable about. But I did wind up hitting on some of those mid-round guys. And I'm not even a Madison Bumgarner guy, but for $6, I mean, the guy's going to go deep into games, and you get points bonuses for quality starts as well. And again, I just didn't wind up with any relievers or closers in this format, because when you kind of plug in the numbers to the auction calculator on Fangraphs, there were only 3 relievers who were positive value players, which is just crazy. It was Josh Hader, Roberto Osuna, and Liam Hendricks. Every other closer and reliever in this format is a negative value. So that's why I just wound up with none in this format. But overall, I'm pretty happy with the way things turned out here, Bubba.
I'm glad you mentioned the relief pitcher thing again, because Yeah, a lot of like just random people would look at it and go, you have no closers. What are you doing? But that's why it's all about knowing the format you play in. You mentioned Ian Kahn and Clay Link kind of going more balanced. It is interesting. You look at Ian Kahn, he went, he has Strasburg, Glasnow, and Kershaw all over $20 pitchers. So he kind of, you know, got three quote unquote potential aces on his staff or upper end targets. And then you have Clay Link. He went with Garrett Cole and Buehler. He got both of them for $42. So he went big. Then he also went Berrios, Darvish. He went real heavy on the pitching up top and then filled in with a lot of $1 hitters. So he kind of had that approach to it where he figured, okay, I'm going to get a bunch of big pitchers and go from there. You've got Jesus Luzardo at 15, which on a shortened season now may look like a freaking steal on that situation. So it is interesting seeing that. Were there any, you know, while you're in the draft, sometimes you kind of think, wow, how'd that happen? Or looking back on it now, were there any picks that kind of surprised you? Because just like out the gate, Cole and Buehler going for the same price is interesting to me. But anything that stood out to you?
There was one that Ian Kahn wound up with, and someone that I am very interested in this upcoming season that I think could just have a complete breakout year, and Yoán Moncada. He wound up going for $15, and you kind of see sometimes, you mentioned it, that in auctions, I mean, things can get kind of weird, they can get kind of funky, where it's just a matter of when that player is thrown out, where, you know, if people are spending up a ton of money elsewhere, if a player is thrown out at the right time, you can just get him at a discount. And to me, Yoán Moncada, someone who I have ranked inside, you know, my top 7-8 third baseman this upcoming season, you know, I would say he probably should be a close to $25 player. I just think that he has tremendous upside. I could see him having like a Rafael Devers type breakout season where we're talking about Moncada next year as, you know, a potential first round pick or, you know, a consistent second round pick heading into 2021. I just think that he has that type of upside. And we saw some of that last year where he was more aggressive at the plate. And ultimately it wound up helping him out, and he raised the batting average and a tremendous BABIP last year. That's going to come down a little bit, but Moncada is one that at the time, even when it happened, I was like, man, I should have got in on Moncada. I already had Jose Ramirez at the time. I didn't really want to spend that much money on my corner infielder. So it was just kind of a weird spot for me to be in. I just kind of like had to let it happen. And it hurts a little bit more that it went to Ian Kahn as well.
Yeah, $15 is pretty good. He had Machado for 24. I'd probably rather have Moncada for 24 than Machado, but that's just me. That's a pretty solid snag there. So it'll be fun to see how this plays out. You mentioned you did a snake draft last night, and I saw you tweeting about it this morning. And one thing you mentioned, and this happened to me in Raz Slam, it's happened to me in a few others. Like you and I, we do our research. We know the player pool. We know the depth, where it is, where it isn't. And if you miss out on a certain run, when you can wait, so on and so forth. But I looked at your roster and I was thinking it, and then you tweeted it out right afterwards, or on the bottom of the tweet or whatever, that you missed the first base run and it got you. Where, when you're looking at it, and we'll just kind of have fun spitballing here before we wrap up, when you're drafting the first base position, what's like the cutoff for you? Because I've had that on my previous shows with Toby. A lot of people ask, like, where's the cutoff? You want someone above this line. Where is it at for you at first base?
Yeah, so I think that there's two different cutoffs, and it's just your level of comfortability. So for me, I have kind of like my first tier ends after, you know, my 10th first baseman who I have ranked, which is Paul Goldschmidt. But according to ADP, I guess you could look at like Josh Bell in that range. Mm-hmm. But I think like the Josh Bell, Max Muncy, Paul Goldschmidt range is like the first fall off. And then after that, it comes with Edwin Encarnacion. So I would say like the next tier for me is like Rhys Hoskins at 11. Then I have Miguel Sano, Yuli Gurriel, Carlos Santana, and Edwin Encarnacion. So that group of like 11 to 15. And, you know, if you play in a 15 team league, I guess like you want one of your top 15 first basemen to at least be your starter at that position. But yeah, look, I just completely whiffed on that last night. It was, you know, I was picking at 11, so obviously I had a long wait between picks whenever it was going down in even rounds and coming back to me in odd rounds. And it just seemed like there was never the right time to take a first baseman, and I just got caught, and I wound up with Yandy Diaz as my first baseman. But for me, it would probably be that 15 at Edwin Encarnacion, which is kind of the cutoff for first baseman, where I, you know, anything after that, like if I wind up with Christian Walker or Luke Voit or Hosmer, it's fine. But ideally, I think you want at least Edwin Encarnacion or someone better as your starting first baseman.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It's one of those that I like E5. I think he's getting undervalued this year. And it's happened to me a couple times. And then I'm sitting there, and you said it the way I think about it. It's like, okay, this isn't the time to take one. And then you make your pick, and the next like seven picks, three of those guys go. And you're like, well, crap, that just happened. So then, well, I'm not going to take one now because I'm reaching. And then like three more guys. It just feels like that's how it goes sometimes with that position especially. And then I'm thinking, okay, Walker, Crone, Hosmer, cool. No, they disappeared. I have Daniel Murphy on a few teams. That's intriguing yet worrisome at the same time. So it feels like then I start chasing, you know, deeper back. It's like Jesus Aguilar's and others. So, yeah, it's not pretty. Yandy Diaz, I don't mind either, like you mentioned. It's a real interesting situation, but I guess that could happen on a lot of positions. It's first base. It's so top-heavy that it feels like it's deep. Like you said, 15 players. We saw I'll be able to get one, but then when it doesn't happen, it gets real – real interesting, real quick on your roster and what you might have to attack on the waiver wire. So I just want to get your two cents on that before we call it a night. But we'll wrap it up there. Frank, any final thoughts on what's going on right now, on how you're doing with fantasy baseball stuff and what you're working on?
Yeah, so as of right now, I'm with SportsGrid. Normally, you can watch me every day from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time on Fantasy Sports Today with Craig Mish, and then 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern time with Greg Sussman on the Fantasy BFFs. But as of now, our studios are currently closed because of everything that's happening. So it's kind of a wait-and-see approach. Hopefully, we can get things up and running again soon. But just a little, you know, heads up to everyone out there to stay positive. And obviously, it's tough times with no sports going on whatsoever. I understand it's tough. I mean, we should be rearing up for, you know, opening day about a week from now at this time and enjoying spring training and kind of, you know, ramping up. But it's a tough time, obviously. But everyone out there, try and stay positive, obviously, and continue listening to Bubba because he's got great content. And, you know, he'll be here to kind of be that distraction that everyone needs right now.
Well, I appreciate it, Frank. It's always fun talking to you. You guys do great stuff over there at Sports Grid. And I'll be actually recording something later today with the ITL boys. So that's that'll always be fun. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys back over there and doing it every day in studio as always. But thanks for joining me. Always a great time. And I look forward to chatting with you again sometime.
Yeah, thanks, Bubba. Appreciate you having me.
No problem. There, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 262 with Frank Stanfill, recapping Tout Wars, talking about some potential draft values now with the issues that we're having around the world. But and check out Frank over on Sports Grid and on Twitter at @Roto_Frank. But until next time, we'll catch you later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.